On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Anton Madley to uncover the current commercial real estate lending landscape.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps for you to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover the current commercial real estate lending landscape. For those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Now, before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point you like what you're hearing, well, give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show, never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, well, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We've packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today we've got the privilege to learn from a person who's been involved in real estate finance for multiple decades. Prior to his career in real estate, well, he's from Switzerland, so we'll talk a little about that. Ultimately, he ended up here nearly 20 years ago through real estate. I would describe today's Maverick as someone who's passionate about lending and the state of the environment that we're in to ultimately help his borrowers. Today's Maverick, I've got Anton Madley here with me today. Anton, how you doing?
Great, thanks. What about yourself, Neil?
I'm doing great. Say, for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Sure. My name is Anton Madley. As you mentioned, I'm based in Dallas, Texas. That accent, obviously, as you can hear, is not from Texas. I was born in Switzerland. And as many Swiss, you are in getting into chocolate, cheese, pharmaceuticals, or then finance. So I studied finance, started out with UBS, which is one of the largest investment banks globally, worked in New York, Tokyo, and Hong Kong. And that was all great. But unfortunately, the family didn't see me much because it's a very busy schedule when you're in that world. And so I left banking and started our own business. We started investing in commercial real estate together with partners. And as a result of that, then we also started our own debt brokerage side so that we can make sure that we get the right financing. That was first in Europe. And then we had a number of opportunities in the US, including Dallas. And that's why we ended up here.
You ended up here. What year was that you ended up here in Dallas?
That was in 2004. You had a number of developments. And at the same time, you also started in Peak Financing, which is our brokerage firm.
Yeah. And today's primary focus for you is on debt financing. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I wanted to have you on because debt is such a significant conversation today in the environment. In the last couple of years, we've gone from 3 or 4% in what one could borrow for to 7 or 8, maybe a little less than 7, I guess, depending on the asset class. Things are very different and the world looks dramatically different today when it comes to putting a deal together than what it once did. So talk to me about the environment as you see it today. And you're talking to people who borrowers, you're talking to people all day, every day who do nothing but borrow money in order to get a deal put together. Talk to me about the environment and the conversations that you're having today, maybe distinction between how that looked a couple of years ago.
Yes. So maybe we can dial back a few years ago.
Yeah.
I compare what we have experienced in late 2020 and then 2021 in particular, all the way into middle of 2022, similar to what has happened on the residential side in 2005 and six. On the residential side, you had all these LIHR loans, the teaser rate loans, and so on, that was provided by various lenders. This time around in the commercial space, it was not third-party lenders. It actually was the Fed that provided these massive teaser rates, if you want to call it that way, with almost zero Fed rate, which resulted in extremely low interest rates across the yield curve for all commercial real estate borrowers. And that combined with all the stimulus money that was also thrown at us, it had a massive impact on investor appetite. And as a result, every investor was willing to invest on the equity side. Lenders were very aggressive. And when you have such a high demand, naturally values go up significantly, as we have seen across the board, whether it's multifamily as well as hotels. Office buildings are probably the only piece that was a little bit of an outlier where it was more flat. But that's what we have experienced in 2021 until the middle 2022. And now, as you know, in the meantime, the Fed has raised interest rates dramatically, where we are now also on the borrowing short-term rate, which is the SOFR primarily.
Yep.
We are now at 5.3%. Typically, for commercial real estate, when you take out a short-term loan, whether it's a bridge loan or other type of short-term loan or a construction financing, your spreads are typically 2.5% to 4.5%, right? So we talk about all-in rate, even in the best case, at least 7.5% to 8%, compared to that just 2 years ago when we were at 3%, right? All-in rates. So naturally, that creates quite a bit of stress, particularly the ones that took out bridge loans and the ones that took out construction loans. There is just no other way. When you do a construction, it's always short term yep. until you stabilize the property. So I would say these two areas are definitely feeling the most pain right now because there is that refinancing need. But even for the ones that have permanent loans that they took out in 2018, 17, maybe a little bit later, they also have a refinancing situation at hand, which is common in commercial real estate because most commercial real estate loans are somewhere between 5 and 10 years in most instances for permanent loans. So you have that regular refinancing need.
Right.
And naturally, when rates go up, cap rates also go up, maybe not as much as they should have compared to the treasury rates, but they certainly have moved up. So values definitely have come down. And that also creates an additional stress in addition to the debt service coverage ratio that is putting stress on a property and the borrower. It's also the valuations that are now tend to be a little bit tougher to achieve from an LTV perspective.
Yeah. So you said a lot of things there. And I agree with your assessment. I gave a presentation here late last year about how I think we are, today's environment looks exactly like late 2005 to 2006. A whole bunch of teaser rates got put out. A lot of 3 and 5 year ARMs were done in that era for people buying residential homes. And what started taking place in 2005, 2006 was that rates started moving up. Your LIBOR and your 5 year treasuries, right, all your base rates that these things were tied to started moving. And by 2006, 2007, 2006 was the first time you saw the resets take place. Mm-hmm. And real quick, you found out there was going to be a problem and rates were headed up. In 2022, we saw the 5-year treasury double in a year. And yeah. It has, according to the St. Louis Fed, who tracks the 5-year treasury back about 50 years, never in history had it doubled in a single year, except 2022. So yeah. I agree with you. I think we are flirting with an environment that looks like that, and it looks like that for commercial real estate. Some of the fundamentals, I think, are different. A lot of things that the homes that were sold in that era were sold with no money down or sold with very little down. A big difference here is commercial real estate gets done with 20 to 40% down. So there is a buffer. What caused the national crisis? I wouldn't expect to cause it again, but cause a crisis inside of somebody's deal. Maybe when they're up and it's time to go refinance and they're told, you can refinance, no problem. It's going to take another 5 or 10% equity, and you got to write a check to keep your property. You know, it's going to be taking it to market. What do you anticipate this to do to the deal flow and the properties that are for sale in the environment? Right now, it's extraordinarily tight. Although we've lived through this through, you know, we're recording this almost November of 23. There hasn't been a tremendous amount of distress at scale through the country inside of commercial real estate this year. But I suspect that the longer interest rates hold where they're at or go higher, it's only a matter of time.
Yes, so you brought up an excellent point, right? In the residential space, again, 2005, 6, and then when the bubble burst in 2007 all the way to 2012, depending on the market, these were extremely high leverage transactions. So the lenders essentially lost most in that. The investors, very often, they had zero money down or very few percentages down. So their equity was not really at loss there. Maybe they had a paper equity for some point in time, but they definitely didn't lose much of their own invested money, if at all, whereas the loss was mostly with lenders. This time with the commercial real estate, the lenders, as you mentioned, they have a cushion in place, right? So obviously there are some lenders that were extremely aggressive. They may have gone to 85% or so of cost, but there is still that cushion that definitely was in place. And as a result, instead of the lenders, now you have more the equity investors that are really losing their money. And we already have seen it with a number of foreclosures that have gone through the system. That is what's happening, right? The investors in these cases lose 100% of the money. Lenders tend to lose 0 or maybe 5 to 10% of their outstanding loan balance. So it's not nearly as dramatic, certainly for the lenders, as it was back then in 2007 and 2008 for the mortgage lenders on the residential space. But it's pretty dramatic for the equity investors. And the challenge is we hear a lot of rescue capital, right? Apparently is on the sidelines, and I do not disagree with this. There are a lot of smaller shops to the large institutional players. There are hundreds of billions of dollars that are allocated to so-called rescue funds. I think it's a misnomer. It's really opportunistic money, right? They just name it so to give some hope to the investors in these deals that need to be so-called rescue. But in most instances, there is no rescue there because the values have come down from the peak. It doesn't matter what asset class it is, but all of them have come down 20% or more from the peak in the middle of 2022, right? Yep. So that's just the reality. So there is, in a lot of instances, there is just, if the loan was coming in at 80% LTC, there is just no way to buy for someone to come in and rescue these deals.
Right.
So that is unfortunately the situation. And that's also the reason why most deal sponsors do whatever they can to keep these deals alive, hoping that there is a lower interest rate environment in a year from now so that they have a way of getting out of that situation. And that is the reason why there is so little deal flow from the ones that actually have the pressure to refinance or sell over the next year. And naturally, the ones that have a longer-term loans in place, they have no interest of selling now, knowing that they are 20% or more below the peak from last year, so they missed the opportunity to sell.
Yep.
So very much incentivized to sell right now, right? So that's the reason why the deal flow is just very limited and kind of limited to the ones that or for sellers.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. So as a passive investor, they're hearing us, and it sounds rather depressing. I'll spin this to go the next handful of years, while they may be a challenge for a number of investors and people who've got into deals and some number of years ago, there's potentially a tremendous opportunity coming down the pipeline, just like 2010, 11, 12, 13 was for those who bought houses at 40, 50% discounts. So for an investor looking forward, like forward-looking basis, they're wondering, what can we learn from the past? And then what types of things do I need to be giving consideration to? What types of things do I need to be asking a deal sponsor for about their particular debt? Make sure this doesn't happen again. If we go out 5 years or 10 years and rates are somehow even higher, what kind of position am I going to be in? What types of things do I need to be giving thought to?
Yeah, excellent question. Obviously, it's always, and I would say right now, we are just in the early innings, right? We have seen some foreclosures. We have seen some restructurings of deals, some loan modifications. But overall, it's still relatively quiet considering of all the problems that we see in the system. So as we get into 2024, as well as then in 2025, I foresee that we have many more of these cases coming up onto the surface, including the media. Then naturally, a lot of investors, including passive investors, then they get scared and say, well, commercial real estate, this is, there are so many losses, that's too scary for us. Let's move away to better places where the grass is greener. Right. That's really the time when you should invest, right? And obviously, now what is really important is that one picks the deal sponsors very carefully. I would say it's more important than ever to really understand how a deal sponsor has been performing over the last few years. Even if they have bridge loans, how did they handle the situation, right? How did they handle the situation with the lender? How did they handle the situation with the investors? How did they run the property? Were they willing to invest their own money into the property so that it could continue to be operated at its optimal state rather than just being hands off and now sticking their head in the sand? So it's really important to pick the right operator that has done the right thing during this period we are in right now. And when it comes to new deals, it's really important for passive investors to truly understand how the debt structure looks like, right? That was one of my pet peeves, really, when we looked at all these deal offerings that we have seen in 2021 all the way into 2022. Very often, they just show the interest rate of 3% or 3.3%. Yeah. But no one was saying, well, by the way, this is floating. Yes, we may buy an interest rate cap, but no one was highlighting this is floating and it may go up more significantly and we are capped at X number. And passive investors just believed whatever they were seeing, they asked the right questions. So learning from that, it's really important for a passive investor to fully understand how that debt structure looks like. And if interest rates go up, let's say if it's a floating rate loan, which is not necessarily bad if it's a truly value-add deal, how is it protected and how much value-add can really be done at the property? Is that realistic so that one is able to get out of that loan even with a higher interest rate at the end? So I would say passive investors need to learn to better underwrite deals that you're investing in rather than just blindly trusting the deal sponsor. So the deal sponsor is absolutely crucial, but I strongly suggest that passive investors also spend a little bit more time in actually understanding how a property is run. Obviously, not all the way down to every detail, but at least at the high level, truly understand what they're investing in.
You said something I found interesting. You said that a floating rate is not necessarily bad. Talk to me about that. And for me, that whatever debt you're putting on the property needs to match the business plan. And that's the implication of where you're going. So talk to me a little about that and what that means.
Yes. So I have talked about that so many times, right? What was interesting, particularly in the multifamily space, that's not across the board for retail and industrial and all that, it was much less prevalent back then in 2021. But for multifamily, as an example, buy syndicators in particular, institutional players are always a little bit different. But syndicators, predominantly in 2021, even if a property was stabilized, they took out the bridge loan in order to get the leverage. Even though they could have received a Fannie or a Freddie loan, fixed rate 10-year loan, for that deal, they still opted to go with a bridge loan, and they did that strictly from a leverage perspective, right? So they, instead of just getting 50 or 55% LTV, they got 80% LTC. So that allowed them to make the numbers work, at least on paper, right? So that is a perfect example of what you should not do in going with a floating rate loan, right? However, if you now have today, let's say a distressed asset, you may be at 70% physical occupancy, you may have economic vacancy that is even much higher, and you have a clear opportunity to improve that property, there it may make sense to go with a floating rate loan to fix that property, create the valuation, and then get out into a permanent loan within 2 or 3 years. Right. In those instances, it makes perfectly sense to do that. However, you need to be sure that you underwrite that deal so that the NOI in year three really can take out that floating rate loan. Right. So you need to have enough of a cushion there that that is really achievable. And that brings me back to the operators. Only do that with operators that really know what they are doing.
Yeah, you need experience. Certainly in a value-add project where there's a lot of moving pieces and you really need to move that income number, yes, you really need to have a deep understanding of what that looks like.
Yes.
When you're dealing with a borrower and somebody's coming to you and they're asking for advice and guidance on a loan, give me an example of some of the really good questions people ask you, and then give me an example of some of the poor questions they ask you. What I'm trying to understand is, what's that delta at the operator level of excellent people ask these types of questions and not so excellent people ask a different set of questions?
Yes. So I would say the worst question really is, what's the rate?
What's the rate? I knew it was coming. Yeah. Right.
It is obviously, if you come from the single family space, I get it, right? That's where everyone quotes to you and it's very easy. Right. You can get pre-approved, right? That's another question. Oh, give me a pre-approval letter. That just doesn't exist in the commercial world.
Right.
We can pre-qualify you as a deal sponsor based on a personal financial statement, based on a real estate on schedule and your bio and your background, but that's about it, right? We can tell you you could likely do a deal of this size in this asset class in this market, but then everything else depends on the property, and the rate depends on the property, the leverage depends on the property. There are so many various pieces that clearly asking for the rate and in a way for the leverage is that just doesn't make sense. What sponsors really should treat us as step brokers, or even when they go to a lender directly, they'll look at us as advisors to tell you where the loan proceeds and the terms likely will come in for this property before you actually put in an offer and then go through the whole closing process, so that you know before you make that offer where your terms likely will be. And as long as you know that, regardless of whether the leverage is at 80% or at, let's say, worst case, 50%, as long as you made an offer that makes sense with what you're able to get on the debt side, it doesn't matter whether it's a 50% or a 70%. It's important that it meets that business plan that you try to achieve.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. What are you most excited about in the next year?
Again, there will be a lot of opportunities. I would say for someone who just starts out in commercial real estate, what we have seen a lot in 2018, 19, 20, and then particularly in 2021, a lot of people were frustrated. Oh, I missed a boat, I didn't invest, I should have invested. Now is an opportunity to actually start investing, right? Even if you feel that you missed the boat, values have come down again, as I mentioned, across the board, 20% plus. Some asset classes, obviously, much more significantly in certain markets. So it allows you to actually get invested in commercial real estate as a direct investor at much more reasonable cost basis. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm really excited about for us as investors, as well as on the financing side, because we are now operating in a new world. So that makes it, we are no longer just financially engineering these deals to maximize the return based on trying to push the every single basis points in rent growth and cap rates.
Right. Yeah. Right. You'll appreciate this. In my home office on the wall, I have a French proverb and it says, buy on cannons, sell on trumpets.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
It's a reminder of what the opportunity is and when it's coming and when things are darkest. I went to school at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, 2 blocks from Warren Buffett's personal home. For all my years there, I drove by his house every single day I attended that school.
Oh, yeah.
And so I read and studied everything there. So he just goes back to the basics. When things are darkest, that guy pulls out his checkbook and he will be buying.
Yeah.
That's when the opportunities exist. And that's when, that's what I think is coming down. You could have some bumpier days. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. Mm-hmm. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that happens to be?
I think it's, first of all, networking, finding the right partners. Networking is really a key piece. And I'm not just talking about networking with deal sponsors, but also with passive investors, so that you get a sense of who is active and what was their performance. And if you don't do that, you are kind of in a vacuum. You know that you want to do it. You know that you should do it, right? To diversify your portfolio. But you're just never comfortable with anything because you don't know anyone who actually you can trust and can give you guidance, right? So that's one aspect. And the other one I touched on earlier, even though you're a passive investor, you just need to get comfortable with whatever asset class you're investing in.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
I'm an avid skier, so I'm Swiss, so that's what I love.
Yeah, yeah. Your favorite book?
Well, obviously, we have heard it a lot, but it's only Robert Kiyosaki's had a significant impact on our life. It was not all positive because I had that drive to become independent and be my own boss, right? And we tried it in various ways. Not everything went as well as it should have gone. A lot of business ventures. So this book has, and we actually told, my wife told that to Robert once, right? That it was not all just the beautiful part about that book, because it has also the negative element. If you rush into it too much and you may move into a certain direction, it might be not the right approach, but it's still, as a book, it's must read for everyone and it will change a lot of people's life.
Yep. Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
It's helping locally. We have supported the local charities, from food banks to also homeless shelters. I think there is very often too much of a focus on sending money abroad while we have an immediate need right in our own local communities.
Yeah. I'm going to throw you a curveball. You ready for this?
Sure.
Your favorite manufacturer of Swiss timepieces?
Oh, I would say Jaeger LeCoultre.
Well, I would say it, but I can't.
Well, there are so many out there, obviously. I could have mentioned some of the more famous names, but it's a smaller manufacturer, so I like
yes. that. Yeah, that's wonderful. Anton, this has been a great conversation. Debt is almost as significant as the deal itself, because the debt is right now is you got to get a heck of a deal and the proper debt in order to get anything to work in today's environment. So you provided significant insight to where we've come from, where we're at today, and on a forward-looking basis, where it looks like we're headed. For people, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. What should they do? Where should they go?
So you find me on social media. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, and on Twitter. But you also can reach me on my email, anton@peakfinancing.com. And we also have sister sites that we just started, which is actually for investors and deal sponsors to network. It's everyone we met. So it's not like Facebook where everyone can join. That's called alternativeinvestors.net. So hopefully you check that out.
All the links will be below in the show notes, everybody. Anton, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Neil.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.